from the mind of the sapient simian. This is Nobody's Prodigy. Free-range ideas from beyond the box.
This is the Sapient Simian. I am the Clever Monkey. Welcome to episode 13, an episode I'm going to call Human and Nature. As we progress further into the new millennium, it seems we look further and further into our old ways of doing things to find both wisdom and folly. With so much taken for granted now proving to be more delicate than we first thought, our fundamental relationship to nature itself is called into question. Now, our original position, a position for all animals, was one of a free-for-all. Now, that makes sense, of course, because animals are limited in what they can do, not just in the actual action, but they're also limited in the forethought that they can put forth in actually deciding what to do. So humans, ancient humans, of course, when it came to what they could actually do from day to day, the general idea was do whatever you want, because the thought was, hey, you can't do much. So whatever you can get away with, whatever you can actually pull off, go ahead and make that happen. So it's interesting, you know, one of the things that I came across, the concepts that I remember when I was younger, is the idea that there's no sin in the jungle. The idea that there's no actual evil in the heart of the predator that's chasing the prey. And built into that is the idea that somewhere within that, the predator and prey relationship is something of an innocence in the idea that you can't really sin or be evil if you're just doing what you have to do to survive. You take what you need, you do what you have to do, and you stop when you're full, and there's an honesty in that relationship, and the prey itself doesn't necessarily hold that against you, whether or not it actually has that kind of thought process, mostly because it doesn't think of it in those terms. It's a very sort of in-the-moment kind of relationship, and it doesn't necessarily think of you as evil if it's a survival situation. And a lot of times, if you look at generally more modern nature-type documentaries, they do try to put that forward as an honest sort of relationship. A lot of times in older documentaries, they would try, of course, to put forward a villain and a hero kind of scenario. But in all honesty, in nature, there are no villains and no heroes. And as soon as you see the footage of the wolf tearing into the rabbit or whatever, you think, oh, what a terrible animal. Well, you follow that wolf back, and it's got pups, and the pups are going hungry, and it's just barely getting by. And you think, well, that's the way it has to go, and too many rabbits are bad for the environment. They eat all the grass, and then all the rabbits starve, and there's a natural sort of balance that goes on. And one thing that really struck me, I think, when I was younger, that it's funny because I had never really thought about it this way, because for some reason I had always thought of predators and prey as sort of adversaries, is I don't know if I actually had seen the image itself or if I had just sort of come across the thought, or maybe it was a poster or something, but the image that came to mind was a picture of the African Serengeti, where it's grassland, it's plains, and just as far as the eye can see, you can see lots of different animals of all different sorts, and you had your lions and your gazelles and giraffes and things, and they were all sort of out on the plains, and they're all kind of hanging out, And what struck me is that they weren't all trying to kill each other all the time, everywhere, all over the place. You know, it wasn't like a constant warfare environment. Generally speaking, the animals were just living their lives. And what struck me was that they were all just sort of living in peace. And even when the predators decided that they had to eat, when the time came for that to happen, they would generally approach things in a different way than I imagined at that age. I think because of the nature of predation as being violent, I had kind of imagined predators to be aggressors and mean and angry in that kind of way. But when you look at the way that nature actually works and the way that predation actually works, in terms of herds and the way that predators work, they do tend to function as predators will take out animals that are old, animals that are sick, animals that are already dying. One thing that I had actually heard at one point I thought was interesting was the idea that healthcare in nature is actually predators themselves. So that if you get sick or hurt in a really bad way, you don't suffer because it doesn't take long before something will come along and finish you off. So while that is in some ways can be unsettling, it is also in some ways a good thing, which is to say that you won't just suffer and suffer endlessly. Something will come along and put you out of your misery, which is something of a consolation. But that is just to say that there is no evil in the jungle, which is to say that there is a sort of a natural order in the natural way that the world was laid out originally. And originally, mankind as an outgrowth of that would have functioned the same way. Now, man began to deviate from that several thousand years ago. And to my mind, I think man deviated from that when man became to hoard things, stockpile things, and took unnecessary amounts and took unnecessary actions. And I think the primary problem with that is the creation of waste, I think, is really the key. Wiping out populations, taking from others more than you need and more than you need to take. The problem with that, of course, is that you're taking from something else, you're taking more than you need. And by doing that, you create these imbalances that really throw everything off. And the key in this situation, and the thing that I think that those people sort of mistook, is that everything in a natural system has a place. Even the waste, the things that they are wasting, have a use, and are if it's waste, then it's coming away from something else. And also, scarcity is a balancing force in the way that nature itself works. Scarcity is a strategic form of control in a natural system. Because of that, planning itself is a key form of designing natural systems. That's why squirrels will stockpile food, and bears will eat more in the fall so that they can make it through the winter. These ideas of built-in scarcity are what design the systems themselves. To the extent that man actually works with that and works within those frameworks, it's fine, but the problem comes in when greed or ideas of perceived necessity or just the idea of stockpiling for the sake of stockpiling, you get things and don't use them, and they go to waste in a way that no one gets any use out of. One thing with my religious upbringing that really comes to mind a lot, especially as we get into sort of cultural issues concerning modern perceptions around the way that people should behave going forward concerning nature, is biblical references to the ideas of going forth and multiplying and taking from the world, and the world's here to be reaped and here for your benefit, and that, you know, mankind is here to sort of dominate and take from the world. And that really has always been a problem for me growing up in a religious environment, that I always had an issue with the fact that there wasn't a lot or very much at all environmentalism in the traditional views of the Christian Bible and sort of Abrahamic religions. I had a hard time dealing with the fact that just in the traditional way it was put forward in religious communities, it was not something that was played up or was in any way talked about. And it was something that I felt very strongly about, because it was something that I felt personally was important and was something I felt was something I needed to do, but wasn't something I felt was encouraged within that community. And it was something I had a hard time coming to terms with. And it wasn't until later on that I really realized that the sort of grounding for that is in the very beginning. It's in the foundation of the whole situation. And it's the idea that mankind was created and put into the garden to tend the garden. The garden is the point. Adam and Eve were put into the garden, and they are tenders of the garden. To me, that sort of is the point of humanity, and that is kind of, you know, the crux of my belief of the reasoning behind what mankind is meant to do. And, you know, when you look at what man is and what man can do and what humanity has the ability to do, I think that that sort of encapsulates a lot of the ideas in a very kind of poetic way that I think is key. I think that, you know, man has the ability to shape the world. Man can actually shape the world according to his will. Man can decide to move mountains or to redirect rivers or to stop rivers or to plant new forests or to tear out forests or any number of things. They can make that decision and make it happen in a way that no other animal can. And man has the foresight to plan ecosystems, to put companion plants together, to design watersheds and to weed out invasive species, to really design a garden. There is no other animal that can design a garden in the deliberate way that a man can. I mean, the idea of a garden is a human construct in a way. I mean, it is, you know, something that is only possible through human interaction. So that idea to me, which comes, like I said, right out of the very beginning of the Bible, not to get overly religious, but it's definitely something that I find myself a lot of times, people that seem to be the least open to environmentalism are a lot of times fundamentalist type people who will point to religious type references. And I find it valuable to make these sort of points to them concerning the garden and the idea of the garden as a way of sort of angling into this idea that it is humanity's role to create and to maintain the garden. I mean, there is no other force on the planet, no other animal on the planet that could ever raise a cat and a rabbit to be good friends, you know, but there are people that have pets, that pets are two animals that would never have anything to do with each other. And because they are raised under a human's roof, under a human's control, the human can bring those two together in peace and harmony and can create an environment where they are comfortable with each other, they are friendly with each other. So that, to me, is a fundamental that just goes to show the true nature of humanity and what it is mankind, humanity, not to be too gender specific about it, but humanity, what humanity actually has the power to do and what its purpose is. And really, learning to make these changes, learning to do these things, is an ancient art. It's a very ancient form of learning to manipulate your environment. It goes way, way back, and it's not something that is new. It's something that goes back to the very first agriculture in any way at all. It's something that people have been developing for ages. And in that sort of religious type conversation, it is, in a way of sort of having a conversation with a natural spiritual force of the earth itself. You know, you can almost think of it as a conversation with God. It's a conversation with the local form of your God, in the sense that it is the conversation with the environment in which you are living right now. It's learning to listen to nature, to the seasons, to the weather, to the sun, the wind, the rain, to the animals, to the plants, to the minerals in the soil. All of these things, you have to work with them. You cannot just order them around and dictate them, because geology and a number of things that are just too big for you to dictate to. So you have to work with them. You have to have a conversation with them. You have to build with them. And there are aspects of these things that involve every role of humanity. You know, there are mothering aspects where you plant seedlings and you watch them grow and you rejoice in newborn animals and babies and healing sickness and tending things and nurturing things. But then there are also sort of paternal aspects where you have pruning things back and culling things and thinning herds and taking out invasive plants and removing harmful influences and those sorts of things. And you learn to pay attention to things. You learn to pay attention to waste, to messes, to poisons, and to the way that everything impacts everything else, the way that everything is tied together. And I think that is really the key. That sort of conversation, learning to listen to all that is the key, because I honestly believe, going back to the idea of the new millennium, that the future that we're moving into is a biological future and not a technological future. It's not to say that technology will disappear, but that the technology of the future is a biologically based technology. Now, that is a little nerve-wracking to bring up, because, of course, anytime you get into biology and the idea of doing bioengineering, it makes me nervous, because there's a certain amount of empathy that is required for that. And that's why I think the first step in that process is reconnecting with nature, learning to see again, learning to listen and feel and notice what we have done and what we have disregarded in nature. But at the same time, I think that reconnecting with that and bringing our abilities to that is a really valuable part of what moving forward into the future will be. And honestly, it sounds kind of odd to put it this way, but in my mind, when I think of what humanity will be in the future, what I think of our evolved selves will be, our future selves, our sort of selves in 100 years, 1,000 years, whatever, I almost think of ourselves as what we imagine to be what we call elves in a fantasy sense, which is to say people that live longer, people that are wiser, people that live without diseases, and all of those sorts of things, people that have better senses, people that have better hearing, better sight, people that are more attractive, people that are more graceful, have better skills, are more intelligent, all of those sorts of things. Yes, yes. But I also think of those people as people who have taken their technology and their knowledge and have brought nature with them. They have brought nature along. They have taken their skills and their advances and have reached down to the plants and the animals and everything around them and have taught them as well, have brought them with them in the sense that they have improved their environment and themselves so that they actually create things that have never existed before. There's lines and things in fantasy literature where the elves have taught animals to speak. The elves have taught the trees to walk. The elves have taught all of these different things. And I think, you know, there's no reason why at some point in the future, we certainly could do that. It requires a lot of wisdom, a lot of concern, a lot of care, a lot of balance, a lot of knowledge that we don't have at this point. But I do believe that the future is biological in the sense that we will do that at some point. Once we learn care, once we learn that connection, once we reconnect with the environment, why not bring nature along with us? once we go out into the world, once we go out into the universe, once we go out into other worlds, we're going to bring nature with us anyway. So why not bring better versions of nature? Why not bring new versions? Why not bring things that are different and interesting and unique, symbiotic relationships that go beyond what is possible now? And that is kind of the crux of this podcast, and the idea behind this in general is just to sort of bring that up as an idea and to encourage you to think of the possibilities. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. Hopefully that was interesting and you guys enjoy the ideas that might bring to mind. That is, of course, my hope with these podcasts is that it gives you guys something to think about moving forward for the next week. I look forward to hearing from you guys, and I will see you again next week for another episode. As usual, I don't know what it will be about, but we will find out when we get there. So thanks a lot for joining me, and I will talk to you again soon. All right. Bye.
If you're enjoying the show and would like to help me feed myself, keep the lights on, and continue making episodes, direct PayPal donations and other inquiries can be sent to thesapientsimeon@gmail.com. That's thesapientsimeon@gmail.com. I do have a Patreon page, also under The Sapient Simeon, where you can get exclusive access to view my other work from years past. Paintings, designs, projects, and experiments seen nowhere else. With your help, I can maintain the show as a commercial-free broadcast we all can enjoy. But a key part in that process is reaching out to encourage me and show your appreciation. In the meantime, I would like to thank you for listening and doing what you can to help share my work with others. Until next time, stay curious.